You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Here we go. This is the Skip Bayless Show, episode 30. This is the undisputed. This is everything I cannot share with you during the 2.5 hour live Go for the Throat debate show known as Undisputed. In episode 30, I'm going to tell you the backstory of the most explosive tweet I have ever posted in my 14 years on Twitter, my Bronny tweet. And I'm going to tell you about flying private with the same company my man Lil Wayne has flown with for many years, thanks to his recommendation. I'm also going to tell you about a game I lost when I was 10 years of age that will haunt me to my grave. I will also tell you why I predict I will lose 3 to 4 games this year thanks to my Dallas Cowboy kicker. And in the end, quickly, I will review 2 of the movies I watched over my week off, Prey and Elvis, for better and for worst. But first up, as always, it is not to be skipped. I begin with my Bronny story, the backstory of my Bronny James tweet that was posted last Monday night. In all my years on Twitter, dating back to May of 2009, I have never seen anything like the nuclear reaction detonated by that tweet. It is now almost up to 18 million impressions. 18 million impressions, which by far for me in my little world is a shattered record. 18 million? What just happened? Well, I can tell you what happened to me leading up to the writing and posting of that tweet on Monday night. I was, as usual, prepping for Tuesday's Undisputed. This was around 6 p.m. Pacific time out here in Los Angeles. I noticed that Bronny was still trending on Twitter and had been for a couple of hours. And I had looked earlier to see what was causing this to trend, and it was about a dunk he'd pulled off in an AAU game in Paris. It was electrifying. I'd mentioned it to my producer, Tyler, in a phone call we'd had about 30 minutes earlier. I said, maybe we should do it in the show tomorrow. So I thought, well, I'll post a little teaser tweet, just my quick opinion of the dunk. Okay. I didn't think twice about it after I wrote it. Didn't hesitate. Not for 1 second did I think, oh no, this might be too controversial. Maybe I shouldn't hit send. Didn't think of that for one little second. Nope. For the record, I have always been very positive when it comes to Bronny. Lately, equally about Bryce, the second oldest. This young man doesn't handle it just beautifully. He handles it effortlessly to me from a distance. I'm not around him. I'm not off camera with Bronny. I don't know if there's any spoiled rich kid going on there. I have no idea. I'm just going by my sense from a distance. This is a good kid. This is a kid with thick skin. This is a kid who has always been able to handle being LeBron Jr. And I do, for once, agree with my debate partner, as I call him, LeShannon Sharp. He's the biggest LeBron fan. But I agree with what he says repeatedly about Bronny's highlights. Every time I see one, it looks like Bronny is getting better and better. So my Monday night tweet was delivered strictly in the spirit of, hey, kid, you're on the verge of becoming something, and now you got to take it to the next level. So my tweet said, hey, Bronny, impressive, but your dad would have dunked it left-handed. You sure got away with it, though. That's my tweet. At worst, it was pretty gentle, constructive criticism. At best, it was just an encouraging comment. So on that highlight, as you've probably seen by now, Bronny goes coast to coast, AAU game in Paris. Gets up a full head of steam, crosses over a defender, tacks the basket going left, dribbling with his left hand. And quite suddenly, out of the blue, he dunks the ball with his right hand. Kaboom! Right in the face of said defender, who looked to be about, 4 to 5 inches taller than Bronny, who's right now listed at 6'3"-ish, right in there. Other kid had to be 6'7", 6'8". So obviously, we're doing basketball 101 here. The safer dunk, the conventional move, would have been to dunk it left-handed, all the while shielding off said defender with your body and using your offhand to slam. That's the conventional move. Basketball 101. Most good NBA, most good college players, I believe, would have just gone up and slammed it left-handed for safety's sake, because obviously Bronny was risking eating his dunk attempt. I mean, if you have a kid 4 or 5 inches taller than you, closely trailing you, and you dunk right into the teeth of his defense, he very likely is going to get a hand on basketball. Maybe basketball is going to hit you back in the face, in your face. Bronny, it's classic 101 basketball. But he dunked it so quickly, so shockingly, unexpectedly, he did get away with it. And it brought the house down. And it brought the house down back in Brentwood, California, not far from where I sit right now, in LeBron's palatial estate, because he tweeted in all caps, "Oh my goodness, Bronny." Yeah, oh my goodness. So just for the record, as I often have said on Undisputed, a main reason LeBron would have dunked it left-handed is because LeBron is left-handed. Natural born lefty. I always call him ambidextrous because he is equally skilled with both hands. Naturally left-handed, shoots right-handed, ambidextrous. Maybe LeBron should try shooting left-handed sometimes. I don't know. That's a topic for another day. But the point is that, yeah, most people, starting with LeBron, would have just slammed it left-handed because it's the conventional way to fly. Yet, as I did tweet, this was highly impressive, and So for the next couple of hours, I didn't think twice about my tweet. Seriously. I didn't watch it. I didn't study the analytics of it. I didn't care. I thought it would come. I thought it would go. I forgot about it. I don't read my mentions, my ats, any of the responses to my tweets. I don't need validation. I don't need affirmation. I just don't roll that way. I don't potentially need thousands of profane negative comments that might erode some of my confidence, or who knows, might increase some of my doubt, might even change my opinion. I don't need any of that. My opinions are 1,000% my opinions. I do respect yours. Trust me, I do. But they do me no good. I'm in the opinions business, and mine are mine down to my soul. So about, I don't know, 9-ish Pacific time, try to go to bed at 9, 9:30. I get up at 2 every single weekday morning out here in LA. It's 5 back in the East. Try to trick myself into thinking they're up. I got to get up. I go into the living room where my wife Ernestine was watching television. Not sure what she was watching. I don't have time to look. I don't have time to small talk. I only have time to kiss her goodnight. And then secondarily, Hazel, our little Maltese, goodnight. My wife was not happy at that point. She was in oh my God mode, as in, do you have any idea what's going on? No, I don't have any idea. She gets my Google alerts from websites that write about me. And she said she was already getting bombarded by websites, taking me to task. How dare you criticize a high school kid? As Ernestine has admitted here on this podcast, she's a LeBron fan. She likes Bronny. And she's asking me, how dare you? How could you do that? How could you rip a high school kid? I said, I didn't rip him. I don't know what you're talking about. And then I tried to explain to her, he's becoming a big thing. And I'm thinking, what is going on? Well, obviously, anytime I tweet anything about LeBron James, what I call the billions of blind witnesses come after me. And I'll say it again. I have never gone out of my way to criticize LeBron. I don't try to trick up my criticism of LeBron. He's just so criticizable. I just speak the truth about him because, especially in the context of better than Michael Jordan, he is so utterly vulnerable. And the billions of blind witnesses have been haunted by me for years because they know I'm telling the truth and backing it up. They know I'm right. But they go out of their way to get me any way, shape, or form, to undermine me, to undercut me, to disqualify me when I hit them right between the eyes with facts about their God, LeBron. I mean, just facts from last year. I've spat them out before. He ranked 93rd last year in three-point shooting. 93rd in the NBA, yet he took the 15th most attempts from three. That's bad math. He ranked 84th in free throw shooting in the NBA last, 84th in free throw percentage. Yet, he attempted the 15th most free throws. That's bad math. That contributes to 33-49, the final Lakers record. I mean, I'm putting it mildly. I'm being nice when I say LeBron has always been a below average shooter from three and the free throw line. Don't get me started on clutch gene. Since LeBron came into the league, no one has missed more late and close shots than LeBron James. Yes, he has hit a few, but he has taken so many and missed so many and missed so many late and close free throws, so many more than anybody else since he entered the league. So many meltdowns and playoffs dating back to that final series against Boston, his first go-round in Cleveland, 2011 against the Dallas Mavericks in the finals. Just don't get me started. Meltdown after meltdown. I'm sorry, I just tell the truth about LeBron. And yet, I guess the reaction on Monday night, mushroom cloud of reaction, was from all the billions of blind witnesses, oh, now you're going to start criticizing his poor kids. Because I see three big storylines this year in the NBA. Number one, where will Kevin Durant play? Number two, will the Lakers be able to pull off a trade of Russell Westbrook for Kyrie Irving? And number three, that could be number one, will LeBron be able to play with Bronny? It's LeBron's final dream in the NBA. He talks about it constantly. He fuels, or rocket fuels, the narrative. Yeah, I got to play with Bronny. Well, obviously, we need to start considering, is Bronny good enough to play with LeBron? Is he good enough to make an NBA team, to be drafted in the first or second round by an NBA team, to last with an NBA team past 1 year? Because Bronny is entering his senior year at Sierra Canyon, the basketball factory out here, the powerhouse out here in Southern California. Bronny turns 18 on October the 6th. It's right around the corner, 18 years of age. LeBron James was playing in the NBA at age 18, scoring 25 on that opening night at Sacramento at age 18. Well, Bronny's no baby anymore, and Dad wants to play with him? Well, so I assume Dad thinks he could be, will be good enough to play in the NBA? It's time to start talking about it, thinking about it, evaluating it. I mean, Bronny, believe it or not, if what I read on the internet is to be believed, Bronny is 7 months older than Arch Manning, who's obviously the nephew of Peyton and Eli, grandson of Archie Manning. Arch Manning obviously became a big national story here recently when he opted not to sign with Peyton's Tennessee or Eli's Ole Miss, Archie's Ole Miss. He opted to sign with the University of Texas. Yeah, you want to talk about national scrutiny? I saw one website scathingly termed him very overrated, just the product of the Manning name. Well, okay, so Arch is 7 months younger than Bronny, and he's already undergoing that kind of scrutiny. And remember, LeBron has never tried to protect Bronny, and I've admired that from the start. No, he's thrust him right into the spotlight on every form of social media, including Bronny's own social media. All the Proud Papa social media clips posted, LeBron dunking, and then Bronny and Bryce dunking, the Laker facility recently. And remember, there's a reality show called Top Class. I have not had the pleasure yet or time to watch it, but I know all about it because it's executive produced by LeBron and Maverick Carter and often features Bronny in the reality show of playing basketball. It's about the basketball program at Sierra Canyon. So, my God, LeBron has fire tested his kid. He's thrust him right into that blazing hot spotlight, and he's forced him to get used to the onslaught of publicity and paparazzi that comes with being the most famous high school basketball player since LeBron James. Bronny is. I don't care. I'm not saying he's the best or threatening to be the best. The most famous high school basketball player since LeBron is LeBron Jr., as in Bronny. I mean, LeBron just said, hey, sink or swim, kid. Threw him right in. And not only is the kid swimming, I think he's backstroking. So go, kid, go. But in the end, is it inbounds to start asking, will Bronny actually grow into an NBA caliber point guard? Sure it is. I mean, LeBron sure thinks he's going to. So for the record, checking the local, the internet websites, Class of 2023, Bronny's class, Rivals.com ranks Bronny the 57th best prospect in that class. 247 Sports, 49th, says Bronny is the 49th best prospect. ESPN has Bronny ranked the 39th best prospect in that 2023 class. So I'll say the composite of those three is around 50th best prospect. Well, obviously, that does not even project to be in a second round pick. So what's next for Bronny? Will he go to college for a year? It looked like he would have been bound for Coach K, but obviously Coach K is retired. So would he still go to Duke? Would LeBron like that at least for the year? Would it be Coach Izzo at Michigan State? Maybe. Would he go to the Ohio State, LeBron's favorite school in Ohio? Would he stay out here, Bronny, and matriculate at UCLA? Maybe. Would LeBron pull strings, which he is highly capable of pulling, and get the one-and-done rule rescinded just for Bronny's sake so that Bronny could go straight into pro basketball after his senior year at Sierra Canyon? I wouldn't put it past LeBron. G League, maybe? Overseas, Europe, Australia, like LaMelo? Who knows? But this decision is going to have to come sooner than later because it's upon us. And if Bronny isn't drafted, it's time to ask, would a team sign Bronny just to lure LeBron to that team for one last hurrah, one big swan song year for LeBron James in year 22? I don't know. Maybe LeBron wants to play until he's 45. I have no idea. But these are legit questions right here, right now. Timely, legit questions. And would Bronny have an NBA future after that one season with Dad? Time to ask. LeBron has rocket fueled that narrative, featuring his namesake, his oldest, LeBron Raymond James Jr. And now for the deepest question I ask about my nuclear tweet. When it comes to me and anything LeBron, all those LeBron lovers, defenders, and apologists just do not want to hear the truth, especially from me.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's, so to speak, go to the phones. Let's go to your questions. Let's start with Dan from Florida, shall we? What was being on Lil Wayne's plane like? Asked Dan. Dan, I have a point of order. I did post a picture of said plane, but it wasn't actually Wayne's plane that I flew on from LA to Oklahoma City and back, my hometown of Oklahoma City, last week. I flew in a plane that's part of the charter fleet operated by the New York-based company Wayne has used for many years. A company that Wayne told me is like family for him and to him. He highly recommended that if I were going to fly private, gotta fly with this company. We priced a couple of others, but he said, no, this company. And was he ever right? Top notch. But just for the record also, the main reason I used Wayne's company was because my wife, Ernestine, is still extremely COVID conscious, and I love her for that. Wears me out, but she is right. And she feared me being in airports with people constantly coming up, constantly asking me to take selfies with them, constantly not wearing masks, and me having to fly on packed airplanes. She was much more comfortable with me being driven right up to this was a Lear 35, seats four comfortably. You could seat, I guess you could probably seat six or eight in there if you really wanted to. Six for sure, but she wanted me to fly to and from Oklahoma City by myself. She would not go. So yes, the pilots did want to take some pictures with me. I didn't mind that. And no, I must admit candidly, when I arrived in Oklahoma City, I did not wear my mask all of the time. Really not much of the time, because almost nobody there does. I don't know where you're watching from, listening from right now. Maybe nobody around you wears masks now. They do out here in LA a good bit. But at some point around my friends there, you just have to give in and give it up. And I often did, I must admit. But the night I returned, I don't know why, but I came down with something, some kind of bug. I still haven't figured out what it was. And of course, Ernestine gave me one of her looks and I warned you, but I got an immediate PCR test. It was not COVID. So all in all, I had a great trip. Thanks in large part to the recommendation from my brother, Wayne. Another question. This one from Nathan from Chicago. Whose Cowboy jersey are you buying for this season? Great question. I used to be all about my number four, my number 21, though I've been known to throw said jerseys in the trash after cataclysmic Cowboy losses. But this year, I've moved onward and upward from number four and number 21 to two jerseys I believe will play the biggest roles in whatever our record will be. I have purchased a number 11 and a number 88. 11 from heaven. Of course, Micah Parsons, already the greatest force on my team. Not the most valuable player, because the most valuable position is played by Dak Prescott, that's quarterback, but the greatest force on my team is already a second-year player named Micah Parsons, 11 from heaven. I believe that whenever my Cowboys step on the field this year, they will know and the opponents will know that the Cowboys have Micah and the opponents don't. That's how valuable he is in my mind. The Cowboys will go as far as their defense takes them this year, and that defense will be driven by 11 from heaven. But on offense, the key, the playmaker, as in the jersey sake of the original playmaker, Michael Irvin, although Drew Pearson made a bunch of plays in his day, must be the newest 88, C.D. Lamb, who must play like a lion in the wake of Amari Cooper and Cedric Wilson, and now Michael Gallup being out for however many games to start the year, coming off ACL repair. And as Ezekiel Elliott's career wanes, I put that nicely, wanes, this year is all about 11 and 8 times 11. And now, in honor of the Little League World Series, in my trip last week back to my roots, my stomping grounds in Oklahoma City, allow me to tell you quickly the story of the worst loss I ever suffered, the worst in my life. A loss I suffered when I was all of 10 years old, a loss that haunts me to this day and will haunt me to my grave, trust me. This loss came painfully to mind on my trip back. This loss always comes up soon after I touch down in Oklahoma City. this loss always comes up when I return to play the golf course I grew up on, Lincoln Park, the East and West courses, just celebrated their 100th anniversary, the big tournament over the weekend. Congratulations to them. To me, it's the greatest public course in the world, but that's just me. For the last, 40-odd years, the cart barn at Lincoln Park has been run by a legend, an institution by the name of Wendy Miller, who was born about 3 weeks before me in 1951, and who grew up a couple houses down from me on a dirt road called Grand Boulevard in Oklahoma City. I have known Wendy Miller. In those days, he was just Jerry Lee Miller. I've known him since I was 5 years old. Had the greatest collection of baseball cards I've ever seen. Always from the start, an exceptional athlete. From the start, a very good golfer. In fact, fairly recently won the Oklahoma Senior Amateur. And Wendy is jockey sized to this day. He's all of about 5'5"-ish. I don't know what he weighs. 130 pounds, 35. Sort of Hogan size, Ben Hogan-esque. And he can play in that ballpark of Ben Hogan. And every year, the first face I see when I get to Lincoln Park is usually Wendy. For the record, we nearly lost him a couple of months back. Had a heart attack on the ninth green, fortunately near the clubhouse, or we might have lost him permanently. Quadruple bypass, lived to tell, onward and upward. He's back working, talking his trash. He's the greatest character I've ever known. He's going to be a big character in my novel, Wendy Miller. He speaks in Wendy-isms, in Wendy lingo. Every sentence seems backward. He hits a great golf shot. That's not any good. Well, that means it's great. And he always says to me, I'm going to come out and rail you. I'm going to play with some of my other friends, and he's going to come out and rail, as in horse racing, as in by the rail, watching the horses exercise in the morning, rail jockeys. I'm going to come out and rail you. I'm going to come out and watch you, follow your group. Okay. So I see Wendy this time, and we hug. How are you? How are you? And not a minute later, we look at each other year after year, and we simultaneously say, Ridgeview, Ridgeview. And for the next 10, 15 minutes, we commiserate about losing that game to the Ridgeview Rams when we were 10 years old. We played for our grade school team called the Mayfair Chipmunks. I know it sounds like a silly name, but it wasn't silly to us. We played in t-shirts with red lettering, Mayfair Chipmunks, and with a little red chipmunk back on its haunches eating a nut, all in red. To this day, we have chipmunks pride. And over the course of our first 3 years playing for the Mayfair Chipmunks, not only did we not lose a game, we never came close to losing a game. We were the Yankees of Oklahoma City. We were the Mantle Maris Yankees of that day. We just flat out dominated. I just have memories of riding in parents' cars after games to the Dairy Queen, where we all got like a dime in those days to spend on whatever we wanted. And we're chanting out the windows, we beat Buchanan 17-1. We beat Monroe 17-1. Every game seemed like it ended 17-1. And in our district, it was the Buchanan Bruins and the Madison Magpies, the Monroe Redbirds, the Cleveland Bulldogs, the Kaiser Kangaroos and the Sequoia Bobcats. So those teams we just crushed, and we play each of them twice. That's the regular season. But at the end of our third season, you get to go on and play in the city and state tournaments. So we dominate the first couple of rounds of the city tournament, when we're 10. We'd just beaten a team from Fillmore, close to downtown Oklahoma City. We were out on the northwest side. We beat them like 17-1, the Fillmore Eagles. And so in the city finals, we're going to face a team, kind of an upper crusty team from a wealthier neighborhood, far wealthier than ours, because ours was lower middle class, Ridgeview, close to Nichols Hills, which is the upper crusty neighborhood in Oklahoma City. Maybe some Nichols Hills kids went there, even though there was a Nichols Hills grade school and a West Nichols Hills, but Ridgeview was right in that same neighborhood, but out of our district. So we never played them. We didn't know them, but boy, did we get to know them. And as fate would have it, on that Monday night, we got to play the city finals for the first time in our lives under lights, and for the first time in our lives at a major league style ballpark called Dutch Lindsey Field in northwest Oklahoma City that featured a backstop that was major league distance from home plate. What is it, 30 or 40 feet away? Well, we just played on our neighborhood diamond where the backstop, the wire mesh backstop, was right behind me because I was the catcher. It was like 5 feet behind me. So in those days, I could really throw. Any pass ball was a huge benefit to me. I actually looked forward to pass balls because it was going to ricochet right back to me, like go right up the wire mesh, right back to me. I could turn and gun down the runner at second before he knew what hit him. So I never thought about pass balls. I never tried to correct pass balls because I loved pass balls. But all of a sudden, I'm looking, it's 40 feet back there. And for the first time that night, our parents bought us game pants, real baseball pants. We played in jeans and t-shirts with red hats with an M for Mayfair on them, but just jeans and t-shirts. And Puma, like soccer kind of shoes. Everybody wore those Puma cleats, I guess they were. But we got actual baseball pants for the city finals with stirrup socks, red stirrup socks. We looked the part. And our parents were so excited about us going to state that they set up to have a photographer be there after the Ridgeview Rams game to take our team picture for the season. That's how confident we were, even though we heard, oh, Ridgeview's got something we'd never seen before, a left-handed pitcher. So our coach, Roy Wade, said, well, let's have a practice on Sunday, and I'll go get one of the older kids. He had an older son named Steve, and a kid named Timmy Klein, who was 4 years older, left-handed pitcher, came and pitched batting practice to us on Sunday. We ate it up. We had no problem seeing the ball out of the left side, the wrong side, and seeing it tailing away. No problem. Good to go. And I got to tell you, we were loaded. Wendy came by his name Wendy because he played second base in one Oklahoma afternoon. It was blowing so hard that poor little Wendy got picked up by a gust of wind and lofted toward the pitching rubber. We didn't have a mound, we just had a rubber. And one of our other coaches, an assistant named Teve Harris, suddenly called him Wendy, and it stuck. That's how he got to become Wendy. But we were just loaded. We had Greg Brand at third, Steve Veach at first. They both went on to football scholarships at Wichita State. My best friend John Corey was at shortstop. He went on to play quarterback at New Mexico Military. Wendy at second, I caught. And we had on the mound Steve Harris, a man-child who was shaving at age 10. Seriously, he threw the equivalent of 100 miles an hour at age 10. He was just bigger and stronger and faster than any of us. And he went on to be an all-state running back for my high school and linebacker, and went on to play on scholarship at the University of Oklahoma. Wrecked his knee, didn't amount to much. Great high school athlete. Great kid pitcher. The best. So we're not afraid of any Ridgeview Rams. We're going to state. So what happens in the first inning? I come up with a couple of men on. Steve Harris was on first. I believe Greg Brand had led off, was on second. And they had a left-handed pitcher named Mark Stanley who went on to pitch at Oklahoma State. He was really good. But I could see the ball coming out of his hand just fine. I hit against him all the way up through high school. I always hit him pretty well. And I caught one right on the screws and belted it between left and center in the gap all the way to the fence. We'd never had an outfield fence. We played on open lots. And everybody ran, and Greg Brand and Steve Harris scored, and I had a two-run triple in the bottom of the first inning. And we led 2-0. And we continued to lead 2-0 throughout the game because every time we had men in scoring position, we couldn't get the hit that opened the floodgates the way we opened them on all the teams in our little league. So now we come to the top of the last inning. And now, for whatever reason, Steve Harris gets a little wild. And now I get real shaky-handed because it's the first time in my life I'd felt any pressure. Because I'm glancing over my shoulder as the catcher thinking, man, it's a long ways back there. And one thing leads to another, and maybe there was a wild pitch or two, but there were pass balls 6 or 8. And without getting a hit in the top of the last inning, Ridgeview Rams are running wild. And pitch after pitch, it's under my legs, it's to my left, it's to my right, and I find myself throwing off my mask, scrambling back into the darkness 30 or 40 feet after pass balls, diving in the grass after them, my shin guards clanking against each other, my chin protector hit me up under the chin, my chest protector hit me up under the chin. It was a nightmare. A desperate nightmare. And every time I retrieved the ball, sliding in the grass, and turned to throw to Steve Harris covering home plate, another jubilant Ridgeview Ram was crossing said plate. When I came to at the end of the top of the last inning, Ridgeview led 4-2. And we had the bottom of the order coming up in the bottom of the last. And Mark Stanley made short order of the bottom of our order, 1-2-3, over and out. And the Mayfair Yankees, as in Chipmunks, had to stand there in horror watching the Ridgeview Rams. I got to know all of them. Freddie Daniels, Mike Kazerman, Steve Cargill, Stan Lawrence. I got to know all of them. I had to watch the Ridgeview Rams celebrating, jumping up and down on the pitcher's mound. They were going to state and we weren't. And the photographer had been paid for and he was there. Most of our parents didn't have a lot of money. So once you pay for the photog, you take the picture. I have the picture somewhere. I've moved a couple of times. It's in a box somewhere. I didn't have time to dig it out. And frankly, I didn't have the heart to dig it out. But I have the picture. And every Mayfair Chipmunk is crying big tears. Tears are just dripping down our faces. Because that night was the first time we felt what it felt like to lose. It was the first time I felt what it felt like to flat out choke my guts out. I did. I was choking my guts out. And it was a shocking new experience because I had never experienced it in my life. We were stunned. We were horrified. We were devastated. We were so good. And we were so done. It was over. The Ridgeview Rams were going to state, and we weren't. And you may not believe this, but in a weird way, That loss has propelled me my whole life. It's propelled my career. It really sticks with me. And it really helps me to see Wendy Miller every summer and commiserate and talk about, how did we lose that game? And I, unfortunately, have a pretty good idea how.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Back to your questions. This is Tori from Las Vegas. Do you think the Cowboys kicking game for this season will bring you more or less stress? Whew. Now that's a question. My man, Brett the Fret Maher, as I nicknamed him, is back kicking for my Cowboys. Like Freddy Krueger, he strikes again. Nightmares will ensue. So, quick preface. Anyone who's followed my career knows my stance on this. I hate kicking. I don't hate kickers. Jay Feely once thought I hated kickers. No, I don't hate kickers. I just hate kicking in football. I hate it. I want to eliminate it. Not punting. I'm good with punting because punting is a strategic necessity. It's really an art form. It does require catching the ball from quite a distance from the center snap. It requires full body athleticism and launching a sort of a smart bomb kick to an exact spot on the field. Punting doesn't directly impact the scoreboard, but place kicking sure does. To a fault. Little guys who have nothing to do with football trot onto the field after these battered Warriors have fought their guts out for 59 minutes and 59 seconds, and these little guys win or lose the game by trying to make a gimmicky kick off the ground through two gimmicky uprights. It's lunacy. It's silliness. It's beneath the dignity of football. But it got grandfathered in, and now everybody accepts it. It's wildly exciting for all the wrong reasons. But now it's part of football, and I can't stop it. I can't eliminate it. All I know is, if I owned an NFL team, trust me, I am prioritizing finding the greatest kicker ever. I'm going to pay him accordingly because he's going to win or lose me a lot of games, hopefully win me a lot of games. I want Justin Tucker. I'm going to pay him like a star because Justin Tucker, as we know, is pretty much automatic from anywhere inside 60 yards, right? He tilts the playing field. He can't play football, but I can't stop that. The rules are the rules. The bylaws are the bylaws. Kicking is here to stay. And I hate it. But I embrace it if I'm an owner because it's going to change my life. You trust me on this. My kicker this year, my Dallas Cowboy kicker, will win or lose four or five games. It could be six or eight games. But Jerry Jones doesn't get it. Jerry Jones treats kickers like dime a dozen and pays them like dimes a dozen. And so we always have this revolving door of rejects. And it blows my mind because it boggles my mind that these guys are going to decide my fate. The definition of the fine line in pro football between playoffs or none, the definition is the place kicker. So in 2018 and 2019, I suffered through Brett the Fret. Now, he made 49 of 66 field goals, 74%, not bad, but he missed so many crucial ones. Remember the one at Washington in 2018? The long snapper gets a bogus penalty called on him, so a 47-yarder turns into a 52-yarder, and he hooks it wide left, would have forced overtime. It was just, again and again, one of those things. He was very accurate on his PATs, his extra points. He was 68 of 69, so at least he had that going for him. Unlike Greg the Leg Zuerlein, who was Greg the Rotten Egg when it came to extra points, he missed so many in 2021 that finally he's gone. These are chip shot extra point kicks. That's why he's now kicking for the Jets and no longer with the Cowboys. So I thought through the whole offseason, the Cowboys were going to go with this kid, Jonathan Garibay, out of Texas Tech, undrafted, of course. Cowboys would never spend a draft pick on a kicker. I would, but they don't. But by August 9th, Jonathan Garibay had failed Cowboy camp, and he was gone. Okay? So now what? Brett the Fret's back? Yeah, Brett the Fret's back. He did kick in 8 games for the Saints last year. I don't have any idea what happened. Probably nothing very good. And Brett the Fret is competing now for the Cowboy kicking job with one Liram Hirulahu. Let me say it again. Liram Hirulahu. Liram Hula Hoop? I don't know. Undrafted out of Western Ontario back in 2014. Spent 6 years in the CFL with Winnipeg, Toronto, and Hamilton. He did kick in one Cowboy game last year, the blowout of Atlanta following the debacle against Denver, leading to the debacle at Kansas City. So he did kick when Greg the Leg had COVID against Atlanta. He just kicked only extra points and was 5 of 5. So maybe he's got that going for him. But Lord have mercy. My season is going to come down to the fragile psyches of Liram Hirulahu or Brett the Fret. Where's Justin Tucker when I need him? Ask Jerry Jones. I don't know. So you watch. Please watch. My kickers will kick me right in the stomach once again this year. That is my prediction. Right in the stomach. I hate place kicking. I hate it. Harry from Seattle, you're up next. Are you going to do a How About Them Cowboys on the podcast this season when they win? You bet I will. I just hope I get to do How About Them Cowboys at least 10 times this year, hopefully 12 times this year right here on this podcast. But if Brett the Fret has anything to do with it, I'll be lucky to do How About Them Cowboys 8 times. Couple of quick reviews before we go. During my week off, Ernestine and I watched 2 movies. We watched several more, but I'm just going to comment on 2 because the first one was a very pleasant surprise. It's called Prey. It's on Hulu. It's the prequel to one of my all-time favorite movies, Predator. Didn't like the subsequent Predators, but the original Predator, Schwarzenegger and company, Prey lived up. Prey is set as a prequel in 1719 when a tribe of Comanches, who, trust me, were the fiercest fighters and hunters ever to walk the land. I recommend the book Empire of the Summer Moon, not for the squeamish. But these Comanches in Prey find themselves being hunted by this mysteriously invincible predator. Amber Mid Thunder is sensationally convincing as a young woman who wants to be accepted, wants to prove herself as a hunter. She takes this movie over. Dakota Beavers is equally powerful as her brother. It is intensely bloody, with stunning action sequences featuring a wolf and a bear and a mountain lion, and for that matter, a snake. But it's necessary blood, not gratuitous. Prey is sensational. I give it an A. But forgive me, I wasn't nearly as taken by Elvis. Ernestine and I did not see Elvis in a theater. We watched it at home, and we did not finish it. We found it unwatchable. We found it choppy and disjointed and chaotic and confusing. All style was shaky at best substance. It is narrated in a stilted Dutch accent by the great Tom Hanks as Colonel Parker, the Svengali of Elvis's career. But this is by far the worst role of Tom Hanks' great career. Cardboard cutout of a role. A character who all but needed actual dollar signs flashing in his greedy eyes. It's a pathetic portrayal. I will give Austin Butler full credit. He nails Elvis's Tupelo accent. But in the end, I'm sorry. I know Baz Luhrmann is supposed to be an auteur, creative genius, operating on a higher plane. I get all that. I didn't see Moulin Rouge, but I did see Elvis. Maybe Elvis is way over my head, but Elvis made my head hurt. One final quick story about my trip back to Oklahoma City. I have another ritual I observe. Try to get together with two very old friends of mine, two people who were actually in my kindergarten class at Mayfair Elementary, two lifelong chipmunks. One is Susan Long, my first quote-unquote girlfriend. I was in second grade, didn't really go anyplace. We still kid about it. The other is John Koontz, who lived a few houses down from me on 43rd Street in a two-bedroom, one-bathroom neighborhood. Susan recently got remarried, second time. John is working on his 50th year at Oklahoma Gas and Electric. I'm proud of him. He's become the sort of unofficial mayor of our graduating high school class, 681 students at Northwest Classen High School. But we always talk about our favorite teacher, Mrs. Lowther, who taught us in both third and fourth grades. And I think she loved teaching us as much as we loved learning from her. I didn't get any encouragement at home, so Mrs. Lowther was the first to drive home the point to me that I could really make something of myself if I wanted to. She drove me to. So Susan and John told me a story of visiting Mrs. Lowther in her nursing home just before she passed. They said she didn't remember at that point them or much of anything else. She just couldn't remember much. But she did tell them that she was comforted by the fact, and I quote, that Skip Bayless lives across the hall. They were a little confused, but nodded along. Later, one of the caretakers explained that the woman across the hall had a TV set, and the woman was always watching me on TV. And Mrs. Lowther had occasionally seen me across the hall on that TV. It was the least I could have done for that woman. We love you, Mrs. Lowther. And that is that for episode 30. Thank you once again for listening and for watching, if you're watching. Thanks to Jonathan Berger and his All-Pro team for making this show go. Thanks to Tyler Korn for producing. Remember, Undisputed, every weekday, 9:30 to noon Eastern, the Skip Bayless Show, every week.